Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Acolyte, which recently finished airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by the rest of my Jedi investigation squad. Kat Banish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. Who do I think Kamala's going to pick as her running mate?
Oh my God. Nope. This is a politics-free zone, unless those politics are the Galactic Empire.
Who from Star Wars should Kamala Harris pick from as a running mate for the entire history of Star Wars?
Kat, that was a question for a group of panelists at a podcast recording that I was recently at.
Really?
With the criteria, who from Star Wars that is never named in the in the text of the movie, so who that you only know the name from action
Max Rebo.
Figures?
Clearly Max Rebo.
Okay. That is a much better answer than any of the answers. By the way, I'm Tony Sindelar. Not currently.
I would have introduced you, but I didn't have a chance.
I think Max Rebo is a good choice. Gets the blue elephant vote. I forget what species Max Rebo is.
Well, he's kind of jazzy. He goes for the younger.
He's jazzy.
I've had blue elephant.
Wait, that's an
conversation about how Gen Z, we're all doing cross talk. Entire conversation about Gen Z is like behind Kamala. So I feel like Max Rebo just continues like, I feel like Max Rebo would have a great TikTok.
I think there might be, when they do some vetting, there may be some bad history in
Did
Max
you know
Rebo
he played on Jabba's sail barge?
Like, yeah, that's I'm just saying he associates with a known organized crime gang.
What were the other names given for her repeat pick from the Star Wars universe from characters who are not named?
The other picks were just not good.
IG-88. How about Lobot?
Yeah. I think Lobot would be good. Pete Buttigieg and Lobot are like the same guy.
Whoa. You know?
Who do you think I'm slamming there? I think Lobot. You were both slightly offended in different ways. Okay.
Let's Pete Buttigieg this. Is way better than Lobot.
Dan thinks Lobot is...
he's just got a bad rap, man.
I would just like to say, Lobot... who has basically no dialogue. Does Lobot's name get said in the script, or is he's only action figure?
He's definitely named in the radio drama. I don't think he's named in the
movies. They were very focused. This was a live recording of the Flophouse. I think they were very focused on Mos Eisley Cantina aliens, which that is not where you want to recruit from. I just think we can do better than Tatooine. The sand vote, nobody needs that.
No, you want a Sing State Governor, or that would be preferential. Yeah, lots of options.
Maybe, it is tricky because, you know, you can't just take somebody who is, who's a governor or a named officer. You need
to know. I would not get Moff Tarkin. No.
Yeah.
Mon Mothma's a veteran political operator.
I think my Mothma would be a great choice.
I assume that she's just too high profile. She's not named in the text of the movie?
No.
Remember, that's your ridiculous constraint.
I mean,
she named? I don't know.
No, only in the credits, I believe.
Yeah, so you could do my Mothma. You could also do, I believe, General Dodonna?
Dordana.
Get the military vote?
I feel like we don't
Dordana
know
sounds
a
like
lot
General
about...
DoorDash.
I feel like we don't actually know a lot about what General Dodonna is up to. Also... only in one movie. I feel like that's, you know, where is he in the next movie?
There's a different general in every movie.
Yeah.
There's General Riken.
Again, who is
is it Chris Nadine? Yeah.
No. But seriously, going back, is it Rogue One? We find out that it's General, Sidul is a general, right?
Hera,
I think we find out there's like, there are a lot of, we've talked about this even on the show, there are a lot of generals. Like, everyone is a general in the Rebel Alliance.
It's very top.
Huge, title inflation. Yeah.
Well, at least, certainly among, characters that we get to see in media, right? You work your way up fast. I mean, Luke Skywalker is in one battle. And he's like general. A squadron leader, basically, right? And I mean, to be fair, almost everyone else in that battle dies. But it's like, you take out
promotion.
One. Well, they have like a complicated merit equation, and the guy who's running the it's a droid, I guess, a droid doing the accounting for through Rebel Alliance is like does not compute how many Death Stars equals how many TIE fighters, and it's just like a giant rounding thing. And it's like you run the Rebel Alliance now.
This is an entire argument in wedge. Rogue Squadron in the books of like who is the deadliest or who is the best X-wing pilot because of like how you evaluate this.
I mean,
who's
Wedge
like survived the longest?
Two Death Stars.
Right? That's exactly it. It comes down to Wedge Antilles. It always comes down to Wedge Antilles.
Who else has done that?
We're easily five, six, R2-D2. 7 minutes in and have not actually gotten to the topic of this episode.
Technically, I haven't been introduced.
Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan.
I can cut all of that out now.
Oh. No, that was good stuff.
Well, we've been away for a couple weeks. I'm sure you've all missed us. I will also, as a caveat, say that this week we are in a different recording setup where all three of us are in separate
More
places.
Crosstalk!
So sorry in advance for the additional crosstalk. We are nominally here to discuss episode 8 of The Acolyte, entitled, wait for it, The Acolyte.
Is it actually called
that? It's actually called that, according to my reference.
Wow. Okay.
Yep, sure. Why not? I guess
what
that's
what is an acolyte?
We're gonna figure
Who
that out.
I did
together.
Write down
the acolyte.
I wrote Why? Down what my questions were going into this episode.
What
will
were your questions, Tony?
Some of those questions be answered? And I will say one of those questions is a fake question that I only wrote down because it was clearly reposed by the previously on as a like, we want to remind you that this is an open question, even though you've probably forgotten about it because it's not actually that exciting. But my questions are, how were the twins actually created? What's the deal with the stranger? What does killing a Jedi without a weapon really mean? That was because they heavy-handed gave you that in the previously on. Are the Jedi bad? And what does a virgins even mean?
If I may
Will
take
you get answers to these questions?
Every time they said virgins, I heard virgins. The entire show, that is what I heard.
I'm gonna
This
take
is more about me, probably.
Can I take a stab at answering these?
Please.
Don't know. We find out, yes.
It's, yeah.
Don't know.
The Jedi are bad, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes. That one, that one say, seems pretty no. clear.
Do we need to do a recap? Has it been long enough that people don't
yeah,
need to know
anything?
Yeah,
we should probably do at least a broad recap of this episode, the final episode of this season slash series. Yeah, Tony, take a big crack at it. Let's try to do this high level.
High level? All right. So, smash cut. May is on a bed in the spaceship, and she's wriggling with her thing. No, everyone goes to Brendok, basically. Everyone
including
goes to Brendok.
Basil.
Yeah, including Basil for some reason.
Most importantly.
Bunch of other Jedi, you're never going to learn the names of them. They're not good at searching the woods. That's all you need to know
yeah,
about
them. Their perimeters were yeah. stick together, which I don't understand.
Though none of those Jedi has been a Boy Scout. So everyone goes to Brendok. If you don't remember, Brendok is where Mei and Osha are from. You know, mining place, former witches coven. What do you call the place where a coven lives? I don't know.
House?
A covening.
Well, they live in a mine, so it's not a house,
That's
Dan.
A fortress, I think, technically.
Yeah. Okay. It's a home, Dan.
Can a coven be a place as well as a group?
I don't know. It feels like there's something there.
No, it's a good
Everyone
question.
Gets there.
Let's expand
we that. Have we have lots of people yelling at each other. There's the parallel fight of the stranger and Saul having a lightsaber battle while Osha and Mei have a kung fu punchy battle until the fights kind of intersect and you have your big reveal that basically, you know, Saul confesses like, yeah, I am responsible, Mei and Osha, for the death of your mother. People take that very poorly.
By people, we mean Osha specifically.
Osha takes it very specifically.
Because everyone knew except for Osha.
Yeah. Osha had a vision of Mei killing Saul. Surprise. She, I guess, had a vision of herself killing Saul specifically with a force choke, which is.
Not necessarily. There is a chance, too, that she saw. And this is the question. Dan and I had an entire conversation about this when we were watching this of like.
Oh, time travel or.
Well, no,
prophecy.
More than like, could she have seen Mei and then the chance of changing history? Like, the. It's very like Doctor Who fixed point
yeah.
in time.
Always
thing
in motion
of, like,
is the future.
Yeah. Like, the. Saul mm-hmm. was going to die. It was irrelevant of who killed him, but he was definitely going to die. So yeah. she may have seen a version in which case it was. May, but by Osha interceding, maybe Osha became the one doing it. Also, if they're the same person, who yeah. does it really matter who does yeah. it? So,
yeah,
or could she not tell the difference because they're the same person?
Because they're the yeah. same person, and they don't. We don't actually see that vision, so who knows? Yeah. So Saul is dead. Osha has Saul's lightsaber, and it changes from blue to red, which nerds know is when you're bleeding the crystal of a lightsaber. A spaceship flies overhead, so everyone knows the Jedi are on the way here. Everyone scatter. The cops are here. The kids, Osha and May, run through one part of the base. The stranger hangs around a little while so he can creepily leer at his old master, Vernestra. They confirm that Vernestra and the stranger have an academic history, at least. They end up, Osha and May and the stranger end up back at the tree that Osha and May really liked as kids or hung out at, and basically figure out, like, okay, this episode's ending soon, let's come to some arrangements. Osha wants to go and train with the stranger, and May volunteers to have her mind wiped.
I will challenge you on, I don't think Osha wants to go train with the stranger. I think Osha wants to make sure that May is freed, and the only way that she will convince the stranger to free May from the bargain is by basically essentially taking her place as his apprentice.
Maybe. I will say there is the very specific line, which it was, I kind of appreciated it as directness, though maybe it felt a little bit like we don't have time to judge this up in writing, where May says, Osha, what do you want? and then that's,
May asks Osha what she wants, but I think Osha wants May to be free, right? It's the sister's trying, it's the self-sacrifice, and May has shown now for several episodes, May wants to be free of this bargain.
Yeah. So the Jedi cops show up and they arrest May, who is does not have a memory of anything after she was 8. We have a weird kind of epilogue back on Coruscant. May's in handcuffs for a little bit. Pip gets impounded to wherever you impound evil droids. And Vernestra kind of interrogates May while also giving a heavily sanitized cover-up speech to the senators. And then cut to the end. Vernestra wants May to help find her old pupil. Then she goes to visit, surprise, Yoda. And the stranger and Osha stare off at the horizon on their,
some beautiful, beautiful shots. Planet.
Yeah. They hold hands, though, too. There's
And they hold a lightsaber.
They hold hands. Yeah.
So there's some... There's something happening there.
That was my intended to be very fast, high level. What happened? Things I didn't mention in my recap because they didn't cut it were there's a lengthy chase sequence at the start of this episode that I didn't think needed to be in it. Saul does a lot of, like, I don't know, being Saul doesn't work out great for him in the end.
There's a good bit. David Harewood finally appears as a senator who wants to investigate the great Jedi.
I wrote down his lines here because I think these are basically just the creator of the show speaking through David Harewood. The Jedi are a massive system of unchecked power, posing as a religion, a delusional cult that claims to control the uncontrollable. But tell us what you really think, Senator Rancourt.
About the Supreme Court.
I kind of want that story more than any of the other story. Like, the May and Osha story is fine. But the story about the senators investigating the Jedi for being, like, too powerful and having no checks on their power while the Jedi try to cover up something creepy that they did, that to me is an interesting story.
Well, I was thinking with the, what's his name again, the actor we saw there?
David Harewood.
He reminded me a lot of, like, I felt like he could go toe-to-toe with Mon Mothma and what we saw in Andor of, like, clearly...
Mon Mothma is not even born yet, so it'd be very easy
but in terms of, like,
him to just,
I think what...
baby. Just smack
down. Yeah, it's a baby.
No.
Cat, but that's not sporting at all.
What I meant, what resonated for me is that I think sometimes when Star Wars is at its best is, and maybe, clearly this is what I'm most attracted to, is political intrigue with very competent political actors.
Yes.
And I think it we've seen both in this character, when in the brief scenes, and then obviously Mon Mothma and Ambador, of just how compelling they are as characters.
Yeah.
Also, Vernestra, I feel like every time she was talking about Saul, was also talking about herself and the relationship she had with the stranger. So it's sometimes unclear if she's talking about Saul or really talking about her own relationship.
Yeah.
Also, one other thing about Vernestra, she She is horrible at interrogation.
Bad. There was twice she's about everything. Was like,
that one could scene, have been a comedy.
That one scene like, where she's like, you know, like, oh, well, we found it, the people like with who've done all the murders. And David Hare was like, I'm sorry, murders?
Yeah, like, murders plural. Were they all Jedi?
And you just, you're just being was like, the murderer oh,
what
Jedi?
Was I doing? Like,
yeah.
Oh, and she does it again with like, oh, and your sister. And Mae's like, I have a sister?
Guys, so look, this is probably her first cover-up. Let's be nice.
It yeah. could have really been played for comedy there. It wasn't, but no. I felt like there's yeah. another version of this show where that it's much funnier. Yeah.
It is a little hard for me to know, like, how much is the Senator Ravencourt character, like, is he supposed to be a jerk, or does he have some very... very legitimate concerns about how you're running things.
I feel like
both the Jedi in general and what you are doing in this exact moment, because I just interrupted, like, I came in and I interrupted your cover-up meeting.
I do feel like, yeah, I don't know, I'm kind of curious, and if they decide to take that thread further, yeah. It does feel like, I don't know, what do you do if the Jedi, do you keep covering stuff up, do you have to have that guy maybe shipped off somewhere? I don't really know. And in terms of a comedy, the only other thing that comes to mind is that I'm never not going to think of Vernestra's assistant as Jedi Stan. That's in my head. His name is Jedi Stan.
He was great.
Because his character's name is Stan in the Outlaws, and that's all I can think of him as now.
You put him in the other, like, was the, not the operations room, but essentially the, I forget the name of the room.
It's like,
and
the,
like his expression
like the control
is just like,
center or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do we have so many sensitive
rooms?
Up. Yeah, I didn't know we were doing crimes today. I thought crimes was tomorrow.
There's a version of Veep that's basically Star Wars that I want to see.
He is a little bit like a Veep character. So this aired a solid 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
We've all seen it more than once. We have probably had a lot of time to think about it and digest it and rework it and chew on it and think about both this particular episode and the series. Am I skipping to final judgments when there's more we want to talk about right now?
I want to mention a couple things from this episode that I thought were pretty good. I think most of the choreography in the fights is fun. I enjoy it.
Great fight. I was trying to think about, have we seen that? Because they did a bunch with the stranger throwing his two lightsabers, which I don't think we have seen that. And most of the actual like few times a lightsaber has been thrown on film are pretty... not super awesome looking, basically.
Yeah, whereas this was very cool. I thought that there's some good wire work here. There's some good choreography. I thought the Mae versus Osha fight is also fun just from a pure mirror standpoint.
Yeah,
they kind of can't beat each other because they're the same person. Which is kind of fun.
Separated at 8, but clearly trained in the exact same martial arts style.
Right. It's the Cap versus Cap fight from Endgame, basically. And, I kind of enjoyed that aspect of it. I thought that was well put together. I agree with you, Tony, your point about the chase at the beginning, which does feel a little bolted on. I do think the special effects of it are pretty good with flying through the rings. That's kind of fun.
I feel like I was confused, and lots of other people I talked to were confused about what is Saul doing when he's like locking onto her, and then Basil has to pull some wires doing. And it was just like, what's going on?
What is Saul trying to do? Like, is he trying to like bring them together to because he says, I need you both here to prove there's basically a virgins. But then it seems like he's trying to kill one of them.
Or is he trying to disable the ship? Or is it a tractor beam? Or what? Like,
visually,
but
it was
gorgeous.
But
it's confusing. They don't tell us, right?
This is a problem. And this sort of maybe segues into your sort of overall thoughts of it. But like, and I talked to Kat about this a bit while you're watching, is like some of the challenges in this episode are that the stakes are never clearly defined, and what people do is sometimes ambiguous, and not in a way of like, ooh, morally ambiguous, in a way of like, I don't really understand what you're doing. And that
it's unclear if the character of Saul understands what he's doing, right?
Yeah.
We're on this planet, there's a vergence. Now I'm going to make people know about the and it's like you could have told people about the virgins for like the last many years, dude. But you were the one who knew about it. Like, aren't you part of the cover up? What's going on?
I did like the character of Saul essentially, and I think I was thinking about this. So like, even at the very end, he's so insistent that he did the right thing, and I think what also like the line that sort of like sucker punched me was the fact that what he most regrets is that he wasn't able to save the two of them. It's not that he killed their mother. That's not what he regrets the most, which is what I would have regretted the most. But the fact that he wasn't able to save them both, but he still thinks that in some ways killing her was the right thing to do to save them. Like, so to the very, very end, he is convinced he did the right thing and is still trying to protect that. And the sort of thing that, like, that twisting for years is actually, I think, really well done. And the actor does a great job of portraying that insistence.
I guess here is my big feeling about The Acolyte in general. I think some people were a little disappointed in the show. I think The Acolyte was an incredibly ambitious Star Wars show. Perhaps as ambitious as everything short of Andor, right? Mm-hmm. So very ambitious show. I think it has some very cool ingredients in it, and I would put Saul's like tormented backstory up there as one of those cool ingredients. The execution of it is confusing.
Yes.
Like, yep. And it, mainly like what the follow through is like, what is really, that's what you're gonna do? That's okay, interesting. So I don't know. I mean, I give it big points for like trying to do a lot of Star Wars stuff that Star Wars has never done before. But then, yeah, some of the execution is like, really? This is what we're doing? Well, yeah.
I think it's probably a question of fundamentally script, because I think the film was gorgeous, right? Yeah. The setting was gorgeous. The acting, I think, was perfect. I think the fight choreography was really fun. Unlike Ahsoka, like, was actually really enjoyable to watch the characters, and I think fundamentally the script could have been a little tighter. So yeah, like, yeah, overall, I give this like a very solid B. Like, I really enjoyed it. It was really Star Warsy, but there's a couple things like I wish they had just done one or two more passes.
That's
on
pretty
the script.
Fair.
Yeah, I think
I think it was way better than Ahsoka.
There's a little too much stuff, and not the proportions are kind of off. Like, in terms of how much, like I was saying, I thought some of the stuff they're talking about with the idea of the Jedi and are the Jedi good or bad, and what, like, what did they do on this planet? Like, there's really,
interesting stuff in there.
But some of the tension and like the build of it is kind of mismanaged. Like, in the fact that we set it up as a murder mystery, but there's never any tension about who's doing things or why, because you don't really understand the stakes, and it's not really laid out. I think it could have been tweaked and rearranged and sort of reshuffled in a way to give a little bit more punch to it.
Yeah. I think the challenging thing with a mystery is so much needs to be tight in a mystery in a way that with other stories, if it's a little soggy, I'm like, it's fine, right? Like an action movie technically needs a plot, but does it? You know,
I watch all of Arnold Schwarzenegger's 90s movies, but they don't.
But a murder mystery that doesn't hang together is like, well, it's hard. Why did we do this?
No, and I think I completely agree with that. And I think we said this at the beginning of this too, at least I said at the beginning of like, there's a lot, I don't want to let that overshadow though. I think this was a good show. I actually think it was even a great show in some ways of like, all the characters are going to be very memorable to me, right? They did a really great job of introducing a whole new cast and a whole new set of questions into this. So I think your premise, Tony, is actually very fair. Like, it was very, very ambitious and it missed a few marks, but I think,
Good. I'm more excited about ambitious than like, well, we had an idea for a movie, then we don't have a movie budget anymore, so let's make a TV show. Or like, hey, how's Obi-Wan doing? Let's get him back.
But as someone who's currently watching a lot of Olympics right now, specifically gymnastics, you have two parts of your score. You have the execution and the difficulty, right?
Okay, good. And just so you understand that's real, right? And that this is fictional.
Yeah, well, it's still, I mean, yes. But to those two things of like, so the execution might be a little lower, but the difficulty is a very high score, and therefore overall I think there are the ones that have been like low difficulty but low execution. But this one I think was high difficulty, moderate execution, actually pretty good execution too.
I agree. I think there's just a lot of some story stuff that doesn't quite work, and mostly like clarity, like you just needed, I feel like it just needed another pass, like it just needed another pass to like be like, hey, let's edit this down. Let's be clear about kind of hitting the story beats that we need to hit. And again, I say this about almost every show I watch, I feel like, on streaming, but like, I would have shaved a couple episodes off of it. I feel like 6 episodes would have really done a nice job here.
Dan, we get paid by the episode.
Oh, darn.
Dan, we just watch trailers all day long if you could.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got to tell economy of story in trailers. Let me tell you, I think a trailer is a pure art form.
Oh, wow.
I'm going there.
only trailers from here on out, it says Dan Morin. So I will say I felt a little let down by this episode, like just an extra little twist of the knife, in that I think unclear going into this whole endeavor if this was a multi-season Star Wars show or not.
Yeah.
And then they left a lot of things hanging to be resolved in season two. So that was a little disappointing, especially some of the execution at the end. I don't know. The mind wipe thing, I think, was a little bit like, was this... Like, did you guys script this the day before or something? What's going on here?
I asked Kat this because it struck me more on the second, on our rewatch, than it did on the original one. Like, and you know, Kat's point was May is trying to escape the stranger, but I also feel like they both could have they didn't have to leave her there for the Jedi at all. They could have all left.
Yeah.
It felt weird to be like...
That's true. They didn't leave her there.
The problem is they really wanted to thematically flip where they were, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's some interesting discussions in this idea of the fact that as two parts of the same whole, they kind of, there's that yin yang light dark balance, mm-hmm. and if one shifts toward the dark side, the other one shifts towards the light side a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think they want to play with that, right? Because they want it to always be in balance. And that's really interesting, but I don't think it committed hard enough to that, or at least talked about it or showed it more clearly, because I think you could show an argument that as Osha is getting more and more tempted by the dark side, May is maybe relinquishing her hold on it. And you get that a little bit in the overall like arc.
Well, the
of these
costuming
episodes.
Definitely reflects that
the
too. Like they
does.
Lean into
sure.
that, and also
they literally
when they
change
have
their costumes, it's a little heavy-handed. But yeah,
it works. But in their fight too, right? Even though they're mirroring their moves, it's very interesting. And watching
Osha's angry.
Osha's angry, right? Mm-hmm. Osha's the one who's very emotional, and May is much more reserved.
Yeah.
And I think you're right there of the natural balance. I agree. They could have been a little more. I think we might have, if they had done that, though, we might also be a little upset of like, oh, they didn't need to be so heavy-handed on this. I will quick side note here. I haven't had a chance to go back and watch it, and I probably will not. But Manny Jacinto, when he does that memory wipe, I am willing to stake a cup of coffee on it.
Oh, high stakes bet.
High stakes indeed. And Dan knows that I never pay my debts. Like, I'm the opposite of the Lannisters.
Means nothing. Sure. A coffee that no one will collect on. Yep.
No, it's fine. That he mimics almost exactly Obi-Wan's, Alec Guinness's wave with the, like, they vary that hand.
He just stirs a little deeper with that.
That gesture is, I think, spot on of Alec Guinness.
Well,
Osha's
doing, clearly doing a Vader with the Force joke. Mm-hmm. Like,
Well, I like it too that she wasn't taught it, but it's something innate in her, right? Mm-hmm. And it's that innateness. And I think one thing, Dan, that you had raised the question from the very beginning of like, what does it mean that you have to kill a Jedi without a weapon? And I think we had talked about this is the first time I think we've seen May actually successfully take someone's lightsaber, right? And she's been trying to do it again and again and again and again. She finally did it here. But obviously, then we see is the real test that, Osha kills with a Force choke, because that was the real test to be.
Yeah.
And then that was sort of my question. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Dan.
There's an interesting... This idea is so close. This is an execution point, to Tony's point. The idea of that is so good. I like the idea of setting up like, oh, you have to kill a Jedi with a weapon, and it's deliberately ambiguous. Does it mean the Jedi needs to not have a weapon, or does it mean you need to kill them without a weapon? And I think the show... is trying to soft pedal it by having May keep trying to steal people's lightsabers because she thinks, oh, I need to take their weapon and then kill them.
Yeah, but it undermines
and it's the wrong approach,
never
right?
To it.
The wrong approach, but it does not commit to it from a storytelling,
but
and it's not clear to the audience that is the point. If you want to do that, and I think maybe they did, you need to actually, sorry, audiences are dumb, you need to kind of hammer it home, and I think that would be really, it's a really interesting idea and would have made a fun twist if you had understood the stakes and the premise.
Well, it's also that thing where it's like, we have this idea... And it's like, where did this come from? Is this the stranger's thing? Or because we never get an explanation for what his deal is, though they insert another kind of, there's the one shot of
cameo.
Weird, spooky ghoul, Darth Plagueis.
Voldemort.
Just hanging out in a cave, watching people leave. got nothing better to do.
Oh, man. Yeah. I appreciate the throwing in there. Sort of like, does he not go outside? Did they not know he's there?
I don't
does
know.
Manny know he's there?
I guess I
Thank
was.
Goodness, they're gone.
I guess I enjoyed one of the things I liked about this show was that it seemed like we are not interested in hooking up to other Star Wars mythology. We want to do our own thing.
But
and then in this last episode, it's like, nope, got to staple Darth Plagueis in and even that out, Yoda at the end.
Yeah, I did not need the Yoda. I did like the Darth Plagueis. I need the Yoda because I still go back to the fact that they still don't think the Sith are in the... I forget which character says it, but they repeat it obviously in the show.
Yeah, there is a... I was just going to note, I sent to both of you, but I will put it in the show notes as well. There is a really long interview with Leslie Headland. I want to say a Collider. It's very good. It's very thorough. It deals with a lot of these things. And part of me is like, I wish a little bit more of this had been on the screen rather than in an interview after the fact. But it is still very interesting and especially, I think, looks into a lot of the thinking behind some of the shot composition and some thematic stuff they were trying to do. And I thought it was intriguing.
Beautiful to watch. It was a very beautiful show. Question, in the interview, does she go through, I think my top critique of this entire show is that it's unclear what Basil's motivation is from scene to scene. Right?
I only skimmed the interview, Kat, but I'm pretty sure there's a large paragraph where she promises that there will be an extended version available with Basil commentary throughout.
Really?
Through the first couple episodes, it's mainly just the voice actor for Basil saying, like, yeah, I'm not in a show yet, but keep hanging on. I'm coming up.
I think you're teasing me.
Not in this... there's no way to know.
I will say one of the best 4 hours of my life that I've ever spent is watching the extended edition of Lord of the Rings, of the Fellowship of the Ring with the cast commentary. Mm. It's a delight. I strongly recommend for anyone who has not listened to it.
I've watched a couple, mainly with roommates a million years ago. I think my roommates watched The Scorpion King with commentary from The Rock, which is, you know what, at first, no offense to The Rock, but The Rock is not operating at the level of some other folks. But there's a big difference, I think, between being in a movie and making a movie. Mm. And the people who make a movie have a lot of interesting things to say, whereas The Rock is mainly like... So in this next scene, I did a big stunt, and that's it.
So that's exactly it. So the four hobbits and the actors are hilarious, and they talk.
I imagine
a lot about
they
their,
bounce off
no,
each other.
They
a little
talk
bit.
About their dynamics. They talk about the friendships and the games they used to play, and the tricks they used to pull on each other.
Yeah,
and it's like it makes you realize
how
wonderful they are. I had a huge crush on Orlando Bloom going into this, and hearing him talk about comments like, "Oh yeah," and this is the first time I fired my bow. I have never lost so much faith and respect in a person as watching the cast commentary. They're like, oh man, you're not very smart, are you?
Oh, poor Orlando Bloom. He's just incredibly attractive, talented, and incredibly wealthy, but he's not smart enough for Kat.
Or at least he may be very intelligent. It's the cast commentary portrayed him not necessarily.
Not his best work.
The commentary on the cast commentary really goes into that.
Which is, well, that's a cat. It's just cat. It's
the cat commentary, as we call it.
Yeah.
I will say, one of the things mentioned in this interview is they ask about a future season. And one thing she had said at one point was, I would say that when I pitched it, I definitely pitched it as a multi-season show. There are a lot of things at the end of the season I think are narrative threads that are not tied up for sure. However, yeah, I'm a type writer that is not interested in an emotional cliffhanger. I want you to feel like you've had a particular type of catharsis and an emotional experience in watching those 8 episodes because I like rewarding the audience with that, which I think is largely true. I think it is an emotional arc. It does play out, but there are certainly plot points that are like...
It is. I think what is tricky is that the 8 episodes kind of close the Saul arc.
Yeah.
And... I guess, you know, Saul is our character for a lot of this show. And I mean, I think it's a good performance. I guess I'm just not sure if I'm invested in him.
Yeah.
And so it starts to feel like at the end, it's like, actually, this is the Vernestra show. And this is the backstory for how Vernestra got in over her head and, you know, something bad happened. Mm. And it's like, Isn't this show supposed to be about Mae and Osha? Who's the acolyte? Who's the acolyte?
We're all the acolyte.
I mean, similar to was it Andor, I think, where the questions were, the titles were always very ambiguous of like, what does this mean? I think there's a question of, is the Acolyte obviously Manosha? Is the Acolyte the Stranger because for he worked for Venestra? Is it Saul? I do wonder if there's a version of this where, but I do wonder if there's a version of the show where like, if, and we talked a lot about the flashback, right? If we had the revelation about Saul earlier on, I think there's a version of the show that could have been, and I think this part, sorry, let me clarify, is like, I do think as an audience member, I was somewhat distancing myself from Saul after sort of the revelation to the last episode, realizing like he has made some very bad choices. And I think if you had made those revelations earlier, you could have leaned much more into him just perpetuating the cover up and cover up and cover up and cover up. And I think, I haven't never seen The Wire, but I think Dan and I have talked a lot. But no, I think about this, something like someone who just like, I think one of the seasons of like, just you're still, you're continuing to make bad decisions because of that first bad decision. And then I think that actually would make him a very compelling character to see someone who is so noble continuing to perpetuate that lie.
I think you end up with two options with this split the difference and did neither. One is do that revelation earlier so that we as the audience know stuff about Saul that the characters don't know. Or this is basically the difference between suspense and surprise. Keep the revelation of what Saul did right up until the moment that May or Osha discovers it. And thus you get the surprise of the audience also learning at the same time. If he denied and denied and denied it, but then he eventually has to, for whatever reason, come clean in that climactic moment, we, as people who are sympathetic to Osha, go along with her ride of anger because we have that surprise and shock and like we can kind of ride that roller coaster. But by having it in the penultimate episode, we know, but it's not enough time to build suspense, and like it kind of robs the revelation to Osha in some ways of its power because that entire episode becomes about May tricking him into saying it in front of Osha, which it doesn't quite land.
It's tricky also because it's like, are we sympathetic to Saul?
Not tremendously.
Well, because we don't have enough time to reestablish him as a character after that revelation.
He kind of just starts as this kind of ambiguous character. I mean, especially it's like they have the scene where he's like teaching school and it's like, what is that actually supposed to be telling us about Saul?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, especially in contrast to like the, you know, 50% of his group that he did this thing with is like, you know, in isolation and one of them's in a bar, you know, like what is the takeaway supposed to be?
I don't. And I mean, it's so much hinges on his relationship with Osha and the fact that he's trying to, like, he gets cut. She cuts him off when he's going to say, I love you, essentially, like, or out of my love that I did this.
I did love her.
Comes into the attachment and all that. And, like, in the previous section where May tells Osha, like, he couldn't help you fix this, like, you know, those negative feelings because he's the one who's responsible for them, which is a valid point. But,
and there's you know, in the thing, they're shouty, everyone's shouting their feelings before people get murdered thing at the end. It's like, you're not even sisters. You're not twins. You're the same person. You're a virgins. We don't know what that means yet. So somebody needs to kill me right now.
There's no way to that.
Does that mean anything?
No, so there's two things there. One, I think when the revelation happens in front of Osha and Osha asks, is that true? Which was a nice mirror to like, that's not true. That's impossible. The last major revelation we have, revelation. Also, I will say, I will say in the script, the one thing, several things in the script that was very good of like the Saul explaining and Osha saying twice, stop talking, was so good and so well written, and I think captured that moment so much of like,
it's well acted,
well acted. But I will say, I'm sure there are many of us who have just been like, no, just stop and say you're sorry.
I had a question for you.
I thought it was really well done,
actually. In particular, Kat, I thought this might be of interest to you. Like, I saw some discourse around when she is force choking him and he says it's okay, and I saw some, like, before she kills him. And I saw some discourse around the idea that, like, in some ways that cheapened the moment by giving her permission. Like, it sort of took away her agency by having him, like, submit to it. Like, to her killing him as opposed to her... I don't know. I don't know how you felt about that moment where he basically lets her kill him. Is it atonement or guilt, or is it weirdly paternalistic?
I mean, he has kind of a paternalistic relationship.
Well, right?
He does,
and I feel like, again, like they could have done a different thing, and it would have made the character much more despicable. But it is a place they could have taken the character, which is, again, like, I think this potentially is a scene, again, was potentially more powerful if everyone would have, like, please stop talking and explaining this to me. That moment did not irk me. I did not think it took away from her agency. I think it was sort of an atonement for Saul, and because I think I enjoyed Saul all the way through, as a sort of, I think, similar to, I forget the name of the character who committed suicide, but essentially him realizing at the very end how wrong he was, and that at the end of the day, his love for her was the driving force, and he just wanted her to be okay. However, I could see why someone would take that opinion and would take that read of it too.
Yeah.
But I think to make the character not someone we hated all the way through, they needed to do something like that where he accepts his fate.
Interesting. I did like, by the way, the effect of the lightsaber getting bled. I thought it looked cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
I never, you know, a thing that you've never seen. Like, even if at root, I think the idea that you need to perform some magic on a crystal to have it turn red, and that's why all the Sith have red, it's not my favorite part of canon. I would just be happy with it. Like, I just think red is cool, and I used red.
I also thought if you didn't know what lightsaber bleeding was, or even if that was a thing, like, I thought it's not confusing.
Yes.
Right? It's like the lightsaber has been transformed by her energy and her action, and it works.
Is it possible to reverse that? Because I think there is something very, okay, I suppose something usually about
unkill two Jedi and undoes it.
No, but I do wonder about this of like, is it the fact that she killed someone?
It's the anger.
Essentially, like, what I think is very interesting about, so what I'm trying to unpack here is the fact that I've always thought about joining the Sith is an act of choice, right? Mm. But her decision wasn't necessarily one of sort of joining some organized religion of the Sith, but taking an action that was unconscious, that is somewhat irrevocable.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. You can't come back from that. So I think there is a thing in one of the Ahsoka stories about how she goes and restores. I think that's why her lightsabers are white. Mm. It has something to do with restoring ones that have been corrupted. But I think it is a point of, like, it's sort of, you know, she has crossed a line, and that's in tapping into the dark side and doing an act that is irrevocable. It makes it something that was like, you can't come back from that, and that is going to transform things. So to me, that is, it's an interesting idea as a symbol of that, essentially, that you can't do it. As an effect, it was cool. It looked powerful. It had a resonance to it that I thought really worked for me in that moment.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And this is where I would be supportive of a second season, because I want to continue to follow these characters and see what happens, right? Yeah. I want to see what happens to May and Osha. Do they combine into one person? Does Osha eventually leave the dark side? I'm just fascinated by this.
I think to your point about this being a choice, I think that's an interesting thing I would love to see played with as well, as we establish the Jedi being more morally compromised.
Mm.
Is there a world where we talk about the Sith and whether or not the Sith are truly evil, or are there, like, different, you know, are they similarly gray in some of their things? Like, is everybody a Sith automatically evil, or is everybody on, you know, who taps into their emotions automatically evil? Mm. I think there's a lot of questions. We talked about this in a previous episode where it was about, like,
I think Darth Maul.
The argument of tapping into emotions that are not like anger and hate, but are love and attachment. Like, is that inherently bad? Are there people who make that work? I think that's an interesting story. If you want an ambitious story to tell about Star Wars and the Force, I think there's something there. Unpack the duality of it and, like, saying you must be one or the other. And, like,
here's my pitch for a Star Wars show. It's a bunch of, like, they're Force sensitive Jawas, and they're just, they run like a non-profit collective grocery store, and they're into peace and love. And hijinks ensue.
I would watch that show along with again the Veep of Star Wars. No, I do think that Saw with a little degree, we saw earlier one thing they did shy away from this that I hope they had wrapped up in the Saw arc is, was Saw more emotional than he should have been as a Jedi? Right, they never really answered that, but he has more attachment. He is angry when he first fights the stranger. He seems much calmer and balanced when he fights the stranger the second time. So we never really get answers to that question.
I do wonder if they I feel like the show didn't know who it was about. Was it about Manosha or was it about Saul? And you know, shows are allowed to be about more than one thing. But I almost wanted to see more about how is Saul dealing with this, right? Where is Saul's crappy apartment? Where is Saul's boss chewing him out for before I can approve this thing, you got to promise it's not going to be like the last time that you went to Brendok. What is his? Because we don't really have any sense of what is his station in life. Yeah. We almost get more of the literal colleagues who basically have no dialogue in terms of how miserable they are.
Can we also talk about what happens at the very beginning when we start with Osha in the wearing the helmet she grabs the stranger and his eyes turn black
he gets
and they flash
shark eyes.
Yeah,
but they flash to and from otherworldly experience Torben. That is never explained. I don't know what's going on there. We don't know what happened with Torben earlier though.
No, but we have Torben showing them another world of essentially entering the mother entered her mind. I think to me what it just showed is that Osha is the is more of the inheritor potentially of her mother's powers.
Well, I think perhaps they both have it. To the stranger's point, he makes a comment at the end there about when they find out how powerful you are, right? And that links in with Kat, as you reminded me, he said he wanted the power of two. There's something about them in terms of what they have access to as people created from the Force that, again, I think is maybe intended to slightly presage Anakin's existence of there is something more powerful that they can do because of the way they were created. And maybe that they are made essentially directly out of the Force in some way that makes them super powerful. But we don't really understand what that means.
It's a little tricky also because there's Saul is protecting them from the Jedi for that reason. And then the stranger is. And it's we don't actually, I guess, do we need a little bit more to know that their lives would be miserable or that they would be vivisected or something other than just the Jedi aren't so great? We needed they had the thing where they had people in jail. They needed to walk through the Arkham Asylum in the Jedi Temple where it's here's all of our experiments that we've frozen in carbonite until we can deal with them later. Yeah, here's all our witches locked behind force fields.
I think also on that set, it made me suddenly envision a plot in which I actually kind of would have loved to see where, the stranger and Saul both agree that the Jedi will mistreat them and need to actually come to some sort of uneasy truce. That would have been so cool. That's a thing I want to see is a point where a Jedi and a Sith actually realize
damn, we're not
kind of have this one thing that we agree on that we need to work together on.
And I could have seen that happen too, because Saul even says something about the stranger seems familiar. We never got that backstory
either.
Never got
that figured out either. Yeah.
Nope. I'm hopeful third, second season we'll get some flashbacks then with Saul.
Maybe he knew.
He may have known when he was Vernestra's
student.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's I meet so many students. I work with so many kids. I don't remember them all.
I don't know their names. It's not like I have Force powers. Maybe he is it possible he recognized Vernestra's fighting style and his fighting style? Yeah. Haven't seen Vernestra fight. So we
did that
know.
One whip move
that he attacks a bug with.
Should we answer some mail?
Yeah.
Listener mail. Yep.
Let's do it.
How many moonlighting based questions are there?
I haven't seen any yet.
Ooh! Should I email you real quick?
No, please don't. We have plenty of mail.
Can you remind me the email
address? Nope. Peter has written in to say,
"ACP,
love, please stop, please stop. I will not read this on air." Peter's written in to say, "Love the show, and I cannot believe I'm going to have to wait until the next Star Wars thing comes out to listen to you again." agree on the whip marks,
well, you
by
could
the way.
Just go back and listen to the episodes again with less frame of reference. Don't do that.
agree on the whip marks, by the way. Wonder if there was ever a hyperspace disaster or the witches had help. Are we sure May wasn't controlled when setting the fire? And Kat, please feel free to eat all the sugar you need or want before the show. I genuinely feel happy and hopeful when I listen to your sugar-induced rants, and that is really something, so thank you.
My greatest inspiration is Patton Oswalt in Parks and Recreation in his Star Wars rant. Mm-hmm. That is who I'd like to be someday at a public meeting.
No, Patton Oswalt.
That is within your grasp.
Yeah. Finally, you're on the other side of the equation for that, Kat.
Yeah, I know, right?
You're free. Well,
I did see briefly on TikTok or Twitter or something where I think someone did a side-by-side comparison of The Mandalorian, that bizarre TV show, and Patton Oswalt, and realized they synced up very, very well.
I think you might be thinking of the Book of Boba Fett, Kat.
Sorry.
Which is technically, for tax purposes, a separate show from The Mandalorian. You might be confused because The Mandalorian briefly appeared in an entire
Venn diagram. Also, until like 4 years ago, when we said The Mandalorian, we meant Boba Fett. Right? That's a very recent supplantation. For the past 30 years.
Jango Fett.
No, namespace. No one was talking about Jango Fett. Dan, get out of here.
Dan, yeah, get off the podcast.
Yeah, fired. All right. They made a Jango Fett video game, and it was like,
they remastered it just now. It's just coming out again.
Did they remaster it where you just play as Boba Fett? They just
there
do
is a
palette
section
swap?
With Boba Fett.
Okay.
Why would you want to play as Jango Fett?
It's called Bounty Hunter.
What has Jango Fett ever done?
Lost his head. Ha ha. Sorry, too soon.
Jango Fett.
It's called Bounty Hunter. Star Wars Bounty Hunter. All right.
Wait, you played in the game Star Wars Bounty Hunter, you played Jango Fett, not Boba Fett?
Kat, when I say Star Wars Bounty Hunter, you don't immediately think of Jango Fett as your number one bounty hunter?
No, I think of IG-88.
Yeah. So where is Jango Fett on your list of Star Wars bounty hunters?
He's like, I just think of him as like a cell donor for all the... I don't actually really think of him as a... Wow. I don't think of him as a bounty
hunter
at all.
You don't think of him at all. Okay.
I'm referencing
it's the Don Draper in the elevator meme, yeah.
Rockwell writes to say, pet peeve with the Acolyte and other reasons Star Wars shows, lightsabers are always retracted off screen. You hear the whoosh but never see it. I assume it's a VFX challenge associated with the props. I don't think the retracting them is any more difficult than extending them, I guess. So I think they're just
What is a sunset weird. But a sunrise in reverse?
Yeah. No, I was looking for it, though, and he's
different.
Not wrong.
The colors are different. The refraction is never okay. Mind. It's
sure. No, I please expound.
I spend $10 on an app that lets me know where the sun rises at any time of the day or any time of the world. It's great. It's a great app. So we can talk about sunrises and sunsets.
$10?
I know. It's
that's what I said.
It's the most I've ever spent on an app. It's called Sunkeeper.
Are they a sponsor? Is that what's happening? Dan, is this going to get cut out?
It's a great question.
You realize that
I'm
could just
sure.
be like a spreadsheet, right?
No. So it has like next time you come over, I'll show you. It's really cool. No, it's legitimately cool.
Okay.
Our arborists use it. So you can see where the sun rises at any moment. I'm done. It's fine. Keep going, Dan.
I'm just sort of like skimming through to say there's some questions about what Basil does and motivations, but we don't know.
We've answered some of those.
What did they have a hypothesis?
The hypothesis.
Did Basil write in? Does Basil listen?
Sorry, someone asked. Sunseeker, not Sunkeeper. Apologies.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Can anyone explain why Basil sabotaged the ship? I never thought Saul was trying to kill May, and he caused the ship to malfunction and crash land. Could have killed them both. Damn it, Basil. I don't know.
Also, I mean, yeah. When Basil shows up at the other ship, it's like, why?
I do want that Star Wars Basil.
I was not like, I'm really worried about where Basil is. Please make sure to include Basil in this show before it ends.
Also, Basil is far more. I love the scene we've now seen twice now where the Jedi just follow Basil, right? What are the Jedi good
what
for
is
other
his
than
rank?
Following Basil?
Yeah.
Well, that's that one scene too where
Jedi are all like red shirt Jedi though. They all look clueless.
Where Saul is standing where he failed to save May, And then he's like looking really upset, and then he walks away. He literally does the thing where he like turns around and like the hand comes up, and you're like, come on, man.
Shouldn't you sense like, that? Yeah.
Oh boy. Also, I've said cat. I thought it's really convenient that they that the Qui-Gon is canonically established to be the first person who figures out how to become a Force ghost, so that they can't just bring Saul back and be like, so hey, what happened? you're dead, but like let's just interrogate your ghost.
Let's wrap. Yeah.
Okay.
They burned his body so you can't cast Speak with Dead on him if it was a D&D smart. Setting.
Smart.
Yeah.
Jason.
Yeah, I also like that they burned the body so there's also no evidence. Like, oh, we think he committed suicide.
And burned like, himself to death by burial at sea.
I'm going to make the hypothesis that if there isn't very good medical practice here in Star Wars universe, then we know there isn't, mm-hmm. then they have mm-hmm. zero sense of what forensics is.
I do want to see them show up in the next season.
Forensics being like, oh, it's...
Another broken heart. He was shot and he took it really hard.
I do want to see the next CSI season with all the like civil servants investigating this who just poke holes in this entire thing. So you're saying we don't have a body? No, we don't have a body.
What percentage of the civil servants on Coruscant are droids? That's the question. Is it more than 50%?
Jason writes, after finishing The Acolyte, I went back to watch Ahsoka, which I'd missed. Admittedly, I've never gotten into any animated Star Wars shows. I've tried. Not an indictment on those shows, just not for me. More than any other live-action Star Wars, Ahsoka seems to draw heavily on the animated storylines, and I often feel lost. Why do you think they decided to make this show live-action rather than animated? And if live-action, why not make previous stories ancillary, not required, like with The Mandalorian? You know, I found myself thinking about this recently, and the Ahsoka show in particular, and kind of thinking, you know, maybe that should have just been an animated show. Like, I really...
And just called it more Rebels.
Yeah,
you know?
Honestly,
Rebels 2024 or something.
I don't really feel like there was a lot of need to have that be live action.
I mean, the answer is because we included Ahsoka in that one Mandalorian episode.
But that was clearly set up for this, like...
And people like that, so we just kept going. No one could stop us, right? Like, why didn't they just have Rosario Dawson voice adult?
It was not.
That would have been fine.
A good show. I think that gets to me that is like not a lot happened. They didn't make any decisions, and the fights were boring.
They squandered a lot of potential. Like, you know, So this is
not appropriate Thrawn deployment.
Yeah, a preview of the fact that I am at I will be at WorldCon in Glasgow next week, and I'm on a panel about Ahsoka.
Ooh,
is this a preview for a panel at a conference that's sold out that people can't attend to hear you talk about it?
It's probably not.
We
sold
do
out.
Have
we
a
can just go.
Can someone use our son's ticket?
Yes, if they have a child, they can use that ticket.
DM Dan if you want a free kid's ticket.
A thing I was going to say about it was that. It reminded me that this essentially combined two of my favorite Star Wars properties, which are the Timothy Zahn trilogy and Rebels, and managed to somehow squander the potential of both of those things. And now I'm much more angry about it.
We took chocolate and we took peanut butter and we just rubbed it on the sidewalk just like you like.
Yeah.
Nice and gravelly.
Dan actually hates peanut butter.
It's true. I don't know what it
also
is.
Also, hamburgers. There's a lot of things wrong with you, Dan.
Yeah. Well, makes eating with him really hard.
Let's see here. Alex wrote, this is just a fun little thing. If David Harewood's mastermind topic of his dark materials was a surprise, the explanation is he played Lord Asriel in the stage adaptation at the National Theater. Anna Maxwell Martin from Line of Duty played Lyra. We went to see it and saw Michael Gambon in a pizza restaurant during the intermission. That's just a fun story.
Thank you.
Our friend Food Science says, welcome back. Who do you think Jedi Vernestra was calling on the comm? It didn't sound like Yoda. I almost thought it was Ian McDermott's voice, but wouldn't have been too soon. I think he was calling. She was calling like Yoda's
assistant.
I thought like it was
Yoda's miss. Yeah, his PA.
Yeah. I think she's got to admit that, like, hey, my that apprentice we all thought was dead is actually alive. We may have a problem here.
Did you notice when she gives her sanitized briefing to the Senate, she does invoke the High Council's name? And I was like, do you get to do that?
What is her job? That's what I want to know.
Conspiracies, cover-ups, mainly Ben. There's a lot of
yeah,
like second-order council stuff.
Yeah.
All right,
I don't know. There would be an interesting thing if she was like a fixer for the Jedi Council for like, you know, the really dangerous, dirty stuff. But there's no text of the adventure
Yeah. So instead of Veep, what I actually want to see is Venestra and like, was it called Scandal? What was the Shonda Rhimes movie TV show?
Scandal.
Yeah, with the fixer.
The one with all the Kerry Washington. One with all the scandals.
Yes. Scandal. Yes, I want to see that with Grey's with Anatomy. The Jedi.
No. Yeah. Sebastian writes, really like the comparison of Jedi training to Can of Beans guy and Jedi Advocate General. Also, how y'all celebrate the good parts of the show. I'm still annoyed by the Force holding up the latter part. It went on for so long that Saul surely could have screamed to Osha and May to move back. Looking forward to hearing you talk about the theories you had that came true in the last episode.
That may be our special thing that the three of us managed to bring together that I think is not even necessarily like always available to us independently, is that there are things we don't love all Star Wars, but there are things to love about all Star Wars.
Yeah.
And even this show, which, I don't know, we're not like, this is amazing. It has some really cool stuff in it. And we're, you know, I think some people just, they like to be angry about stuff and, I'm not interested in being.
Yeah, I didn't read this because it was only mentioning us in passing. But Rowan,
I have no interest in that.
Rowan wrote that he the only Star Wars fan commentary I'm exposed to is ACP and general other stuff that floats past on social media. And he described us as generally all pretty happy and positive stuff, and if critical, usually constructively critical, which is why he attributed to why he didn't hate this show like some other people did. So I think
he doesn't hate us. He doesn't like us.
No. He doesn't hate us. The acolyte.
Oh, well, how does he feel about the accomplishment?
Saying
I
that
just say
we are happy and positive and constructively critical about things, which has influenced our listeners to perhaps
Disney
also
should
be
hire us then. No, like give this constructive feedback.
No, that's not.
This is just some life advice for everybody. I think if you hate a show, you should stop watching. Yeah, I don't watch any shows I hate. I watch shows that I'm embarrassed to talk about watching. I won't be identifying any of those right now.
Here's a question on that for both of you. And this was something that I didn't start doing until Dan and I were talking about this, I think actually yesterday, about how often do you put down books that you don't enjoy reading? Do you feel like you have to finish them?
Because I feel like I have to finish everything. Yeah.
Including TV shows?
Yes. Oh, I'm real bad about that. The number of shows I've watched that I should have quit a long time ago. I'm real bad about that. I can't. Yeah, no, this is a failure of me as a person. I would say that I don't give up on any books. Please do not consult like my Kindle to see which books I haven't
even
finished.
If you're not enjoying it.
There's not books let me put it this way. Tony doesn't give up on books. There's just books he hasn't gotten around to finishing yet.
Yeah, basically saving them for jail. Kat, once you start giving up on TV shows, then you give up on books. Then you give up on people. Where does it end? Being happy
so
all the time?
I give having, up on TV shows
having,
all
having
the
boundaries
time.
between yourselves and coworkers? Where does it end?
Dennis very used to me. I was watching an episode or two of a show that's like, I'm like, I'm just fine. You can watch like, it without me.
Kat, what about the shows that you're like, kind of on, where Dan's not allowed to watch them on his own, but also can never watch them again? Never mind, that doesn't happen.
Most of the shows eventually get released. Like, I recognize there's a statute of limitations. Okay.
Is the statute of limitations?
It's like 2 or 3 years.
2 years?
Yeah. 2 years? You know what? It says a lot that you both said it. You said it in very different voices, but the fact that you both knew that it was 24 months, that's important. That's good.
That's
good.
Like, I'm not going to come back to it. You can watch it without me.
Yeah, 2 years is such a long time.
It is such a long time.
I just appreciate that you know it. My pal
John Moltz is famous for watching one episode of show, even shows that he likes. He'll watch one episode and just be like, oh, I like that. I should go watch more of it. And like, which we now call Moltzing it.
I can't. It's like a commitment, and I can't let go of it from my brain.
If I watch an episode and like I'm like, nah, it's not for me. But I do. I put down books a lot more frequently than I used to. I remember the first book I put down and thought,
yeah, similar.
No, I'm not going to finish this, and it was fairly. I mean, it was within the last decade or
ironically,
so that I really
Dan's
started doing
own book.
Yeah,
why was he reading it?
It's garbage.
I've seen this before.
Why would anyone read this?
This seems derivative of some really great ideas I had.
Yeah, there's a lot of books I'll put down within the first chapter. I'm like, I don't feel like this right now, but I'll come back to it. But there are definitely some books I'll get, quarter of the way through, and I'm just like, not worth it. I'll just put it down.
It's, there's also that tricky, If I'm like 30% of the way into a book, that's real hard. When it's like, it's I don't
sunk,
like this
sunk
book.
Cost fallacy time.
Yeah, sunk cost, but I'm already so I. Oh God, one of my brothers wrote a fantasy novel that I am 45% of the way through and have been for. When was the pandemic? Like 6 years. So
now I want to know which brother, but we'll take it offline.
Okay. Yeah, when I will say when I'm on 70% and I need to finish a book, I will then just sort of like speed read through just to like close it. I will say I then typically if I don't like the book and I really hate it and I don't finish it, I won't review it on Goodreads, right?
Mm.
Three yeah. typically means for me that I finished it, but I didn't like it.
I gotta really hate something to review a bad on Goodreads, like to give a 1 or 2 star review. Mm-hmm. It's gotta be something that actively is like there's very few books that I actively get that angry about and will finish.
I think the only thing that I'm good at quitting, I'm reasonably good at quitting a podcast.
Wait, we're not done yet.
Listeners, here's the trick. The people who need this information will never hear this. If you've got, you need to pick a number.
When did you quit like, podcasts?
I quit podcasts all the time. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and in order to listen to more podcasts...
I thought there were podcasts that you were podcast, doing, and I was saying that you're just like, that's, I'm done.
We all assume Tony's just like, and I'm out now. Goodbye.
Cat. I didn't want you to find out this way, but this is it.
TPK no. is over.
I don't listen to TPK. Tony I don't care for them. Podcasts I listen to. You just have to assign a number. And it's like, if you have more than that unlistened to episodes.
That's good.
The number I have is very high. But
what's the number?
10?
It's 100.
100?
I was going to say 10 was really high.
That is a reasonable number. The number I have is a different number, Dan. Okay. And if you have not listened to a podcast in 100 episodes, you should delete it.
All right. Well, we learned something interesting here.
Anyways, yep.
So those
earlier statements about being bad at quitting things.
Our last, our mail previously addressed was from our Mastodon account, which is acp@zeppelin.flights. We have a couple of emails to acp@theincomparable.com as well.
Hang on. What was that? ACC? Say that once more?
Nope. Ben writes, if you cannot figure that out, I do not know how to help you.
Ben writes that? That's very prescient. Wow, Ben.
Ben writes,
judgy a bit there.
Hi, Dan, Tony, and Kat. I love the digression-heavy nature of your last episode. Good news, Ben.
I thought we had 2 weeks. We would get, like, this would be real time. I thought we were going to be done about 40 minutes ago.
No. You know what I think it is? It's like, Tony, we all grew up in the area, right? We all grew up on Car Talk, right? Did you guys listen to Car Talk growing up?
I have been told by my own mom that our podcast, not this podcast, another podcast, is like Car Talk, but not very funny.
For those who don't know, Car Talk is like one of the greatest NPR podcasts about these two brothers who are like not only talking about cars, but
really
just
really
like
enjoyed
told
that you described
jokes.
It as an NPR podcast, Kat. It was on the radio for decades. Yeah.
It's possible that at least one of the brothers passed away before podcasting was invented. That's not true.
The other one was once in a restaurant when Kat and I were out there. He stole our desserts.
Yeah, he lives in Cambridge. That's not like...
Oh, it wasn't
he
in Cambridge.
He stole your dessert.
It got delivered to his table by mistake.
Well, they didn't steal them,
no,
Dan.
No, 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 no.
Words have meaning.
We were sitting at dinner with Dan's parents and we're like, God, that voice is so familiar.
Yeah,
what
we
is
heard
that
him.
Voice?
It was really weird. Okay. And he started laughing. He did the like, and you're like, oh, yeah. And it was like,
don't drive like my brother.
Yeah, that's what he said. He was just going around saying that. It was very weird.
He was just saying that. He's really a sad story, honestly. All right.
Somewhere, I'm sorry, they still Ben, have I digressed from your email so far that we didn't even
finish. In Harvard Square,
it.
They still have the Tui Chitam in hell.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Tui
Anyway, so when I say I've never listened to Car Talk, I've listened to a bunch of Car Talk.
Ben writes, I love the digression heavy nature of your last episode, particularly when you talked about the Mighty Ducks. I wonder how Obi-Wan would explain the Mighty Ducks to Luke when we know from the original Star Wars novelization that Luke has no idea what a duck is. Yes, famous reference.
Quick comment.
There's a bit in the novelization where Obi-Wan mentions a duck and Luke says, what's a duck?
Why was that cut? It was such a good line.
How did that
they
make it?
They wrote the novelization and like fleshed it out. Alan Dean Foster ghost wrote it, and no, there's a whole thing.
Did he get paid for that? I forget.
Probably. Quick comment on the choice. Now, he capitalized this in, as though it's the name of the episode, which I'm pretty sure is The Acolyte, but I don't know if they did that one of those things where they don't tell you what the name is.
Or is that the last episode? Last episode was Choice,
the previous one?
Well, you thought it was going to be Destiny and Fate.
It was
no
Choice. It was Choice.
It was Choice. You okay, thought it was Destiny and Fate, but those aren't things.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. We're
when good the now. Episode kept cutting away to the witches swaying back and forth in the common room, did anyone else get vibes similar to the scenes in Labyrinth where they cut away to David Bowie and the goblins? It didn't help that it took me a rewatch to understand where the witches were physically in relation to the Jedi fight. I still think The Acolyte is a good series. I'm excited for the finale. Rip Yord and Jekki.
Yord. I do, when the music eventually comes out, I do just want the song of the witches chanting. I thought that was so good.
It's probably out now because they usually do it after the last episode drops. Tristan has.
I can see the Labyrinth vibes, especially because they had essentially.
You can't see their feet. That's the key. Right? They could be Muppets. We don't know what's going on there.
Also, when the contact juggling that Saul did was really impressive.
Tristan writes in, hello again, ACP. The Acolyte has finished, and that was a show. Now for some drunken ramblings. There's a lot of points in here about things that don't necessarily make sense. For example, May running away and Basil so sabotaging the ship. May expresses concern for Pip, the glorified smartphone she met only a couple hours ago and factory reset the instant she got a chance.
I do want to call it whoever called out for evil Pip in the last episode. Like, I think that came true that Pip is now on the side of May.
Yeah, but it's not evil. He's just...
He's just Dark Jedi programmed.
Or Pip is always good and recognizing, and it's actually through the lens of Pip that we acknowledge.
Pip, Pip is the central character of the show.
Is Pip the Acolyte?
Yes. We acknowledge through Pip the juxtaposition of Osha's journey into the darkness, which is now that Pip is opposed to Osha. It's really... Pip is really the lens we should be looking through.
Tristan also adds Osha and Chimera arrive at the elevator and it's out of order, but Osha can get it working despite that 16 years ago May destroyed the controls and the generator exploded. Fair point. May and Osha fight each other and mirror each other's moves perfectly, which may have been interesting if I wasn't reminded of the same scene in Arrested Development where Oscar Bluth fights his identical twin. We get a little critical here. May and Osha are somehow revealed to be the same person, so I guess they each only have half a brain, which explains their terrible decision making. Saul says that without May, there was no evidence they were the same person, ignoring that he had blood samples and three other Jedis as witnesses. I did wonder about this, but I guess like the point was he needed both of them to be like, look, they're the same person, and everyone's like, Saul, they're twins. You're drunk. Go home.
Yeah. It's a virgins. Yeah, we get it, Saul. You're really drunk. Let's take you home, buddy.
Vernestra decided to cover up the cover-up with a terrible cover-up, which I agree with, but like I think that's kind of the point. Although she points out, except Saul was at the Jedi Temple on Coruscant when Indara was murdered, and there were several eyewitnesses, and Torben was dead by the time Saul arrived at the temple, and there was a witness to that murder, too. If you're going to use someone as a fall guy, maybe choose someone who doesn't have rock-solid alibis for two-thirds of your story.
Yeah.
Also, she doesn't even mention the other half-dozen or so Jedi that were killed in the forest. These are all good
she
points.
She will at some point by accident. Yeah, CSI Coruscant. That's the show I'm now behind, being like...
Why? Yeah. Instead of her going in and meeting Yoda, there just needed to be a scene where she walked through like the Jedi Temple morgue that just had like the dozens of Jedi that have died in this adventure stacked up like cordwood next to the door.
Tristan has some opinions. This show is a mess. Character motivations seem to change as per the script demands it. The writing and editing are not good. It feels like this is the first draft of the script, not necessarily a bad concept, just needs a lot more work. It was sold as a mystery or Rashomon style story, but it feels like they made a straightforward story that was poorly cut into a not so mysterious mystery box. I think this is the worst live action Star Wars show to date, although it's a race to the bottom with Kenobi. There seems to be some people talking online about the lessons or teaching of Star Wars and whatnot. The only lesson I've learned for Star Wars is finish the damn job. Don't leave your enemy to die. Just kill them and make sure they're dead. It will solve so many problems down the road. Anyway, thanks for the excellent podcasting.
Thanks for writing in.
Thanks. I that is the bold statement. I will disagree in that. I do think I like Kenobi. I don't know where Kenobi's. I always forget about Kenobi. Kenobi has some good moments. I think the Book of Boba Fett is worse than this.
Yes,
and I think
Ahsoka
is worse than this.
Yeah. I will sadly kind of agree with it. There's bits I like in Ahsoka, but yeah, it's not.
Until Kat, you were like doing the recap of Ahsoka earlier, I had forgotten about Ahsoka. It does not stick to my brain. Which
my
is
favorite
not
thing
good.
in that show
is
might
West
be
Chatham. Yeah.
No, I was gonna say I and like
his golden face.
Yeah, for reasons.
And the mask.
I like the Iman Asfandi as grown up Ezra. I think he's a lot of fun, but we just don't get a lot of time with him.
They just never talk about. Hey, there were yes.
Anyways,
refer to our previous episodes about our issues with that mm-hmm. show.
Yep.
Mm. Did we cover that show?
We did. David writes, Dear Dan, Kat, and Tony, I thoroughly enjoyed this season of the show. While the plotting and characterization may have needed some more work, things came together in a reasonably satisfying way. We learned new and interesting things about the lore and people's backstories, and who really cares if not everything made sense or contradicted established canon? I really only have one quibble, which is that your review of the first episode, you discussed what Batman's Sith name would be, and nobody came up with the obviously correct answer, Darth Knight. Separately.
Mm. That's good.
Separately, the Acolyte was perfect. 10-10, no notes, none at all. So I think that first part was a review of our show.
Oh.
So good. Okay, good for us. Thanks again for the charming repartee, and may the force be with you, parentheses. MTFBY, parentheses, A.
So I did, I think it was till the show, I always thought they said always at the end of that.
No,
it's just me.
There's one line where Ben says, the force will be with you always. When
always.
He leaves
that's...
Luke. But they, yeah, that's the only time that's said, I believe.
Okay.
Anyway.
Thank you. Today I learned.
Finally, I think this is our last bit of mail. Jay writes, hi, I guess I'm probably too late for your end of season episode, but just in case not, here's my thoughts. Overall, I really liked it. There were lots of great scenes, and it's an interesting story that I enjoyed following and guessing where it might be going from week to week. I like the unreliable narrator style, but I think they should have leaned into it more, spread out the flashbacks across the season. They could have then done one per character from the incident, perhaps just before they're killed. In Dara's view in episode 1, Torben's in episode 2, which would have been twisted by the witch's effect on his mind. Kelnaka's would have all been in Wookiee. Shriwoka, sorry. Sorry, Jay, but let's have respect for the culture. It's a shame the show took so much heat from trolls online. I hope that didn't harm people's view of it. There were some issues, which you've discussed in the podcast, but overall it was great, and I want to see more. I performed a small experiment over the weeks. Whenever there was a Facebook post by StarWars.com or the entertainment accounts, i.e. IGN and the like, I checked the comments early and then again later in the week. The same pattern emerged. Initially, lots of bad comments and laughing emoji reactions, but then later on, the laugh emojis cap out between 500 and 600, whereas the likes and love emojis double or triple that number, and all the reviews are positive. Hopefully, the execs at Disney are smart enough to understand and ignore the review bombing. Anyway, hope we get to see a second season and find out the next chapter of the story. Thanks, as always, for another awesome podcast series. Really enjoyed hearing you all discuss each episode of the show. Hope it's not too long before we have more Star Wars for you to review and discuss. Jay, thank you. We appreciate that. That's a very nice thing to say, and I like your experiment a lot.
Yeah,
I also think your narrator thing is actually kind of a great format. I would have liked to see that. I think that would have been kind of cool.
Basil's too.
The Basil.
Yeah,
episode.
No, and I think I hope that Disney is fundamentally looking at like they should have access to the actual watch numbers,
yes,
which matter more than anything else.
I haven't finished listening to this episode, but a show that I listened to called The Town, which is about the business of Hollywood, did an episode recently about specifically Star Wars and the numbers for Star Wars. I do wonder a little bit. I didn't get far enough to realize they were talking about a particular, I don't want the right word. It's not a study, but like particular report that came out from a firm that tracks streaming numbers, talking about Star Wars numbers and how a lot of times they start really high, like Kenobi had a really huge opening, but then it tailed off. And a lot of them, you know, you'll see spikes at times when certain things happen on shows, like when Hayden Christensen showed up on Ahsoka, you'd get like a bump because people are like, oh, Hayden Christensen's there. I want to go watch it. The Acolyte did okay, was my understanding. I don't think they had the finale numbers fully because it's streaming, right? So they look at it over a period of time. But I think it did started okay, but again, had the same problem where it sort of tailed off, but it did pop up after the, what was it, episode 5? That was like the fight episode. So, you know, there's still some stuff there. I think Disney is not making all their numbers even based on just, they're not making decisions entirely based on numbers. They kind of have a holistic play here happening.
Yeah, who goes to Galaxy's Edge based on all this, and sort of the fact that Disney's always had a very different revenue model than than just a pure entertainment company, which makes them super interesting.
They like having their vault of stuff, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Jay, thank you for entering that with saying hope it's not too long before we have more Star Wars for you to review and discuss, because it's convenient that we happen to also record this on the day when Disney has announced that the next series, Skeleton Crew, will premiere on December 3rd. So
wow, I don't have to talk to you guys till December?
You get
that's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I still would like to propose, and folks, write in if you hate this idea or you support this idea.
Those are the only reasons.
If you're indifferent, stay home.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
If you're indifferent, then you don't care. That's fine.
Save the email. Yeah. write to somebody else. Check it to your parents.
Yeah, write to Biff. My theory still is proposal is that we watch A New Hope, and we draft characters, and we have to voice over all the characters, because I think we realized when we played the trivia game just how little of the script we actually know.
This is an idea.
It's an idea.
We all agree it's an idea. We are in consensus that you have voiced an idea.
I think it's an interesting idea that will fall apart within about 5 to 10 minutes.
Oh, 100%.
As we realize there are way too many characters with like one line that we have to remember.
No. I've already looked it up, actually. Someone did a really good Reddit thread. I can do this.
Okay. All right. You don't even need us.
Yeah.
You probably just dump the script into an AI and have it tell you.
Yeah,
all
actually,
the characters.
Dan probably has enough isolated recordings of each of us that he can just automate this. So
that's true. That's a good point.
I think one of the issues is it's actually a little hard to find the script.
Really? That should not be hard. There's script archives online that I studied.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different versions of A New Hope, including all the different drafts that existed.
That's a good point. It depends which version you're watching.
I digress. But open to other ideas, too, if folks wanted. I think we've also had requests to do a commentary in a Moonlight episode.
That did come up. We're really good at doing one-off episodes. That is one of our strengths.
Is it?
No, we're really bad at it.
I think we're really bad at it.
that was sarcasm. Everyone's going to really miss us for the next 3 or 4 months, I guess.
Or not.
Maybe not.
Not everyone.
Well, some people, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Somewhere.
Whatever.
But we really appreciate everybody listening and everybody who sends in letters to ACP at thinkoutable.com or ACP at Zeppelin.flights on Mastodon. It's a lot of fun to hear from everybody. I think this is the show that gets the most feedback of any show that I record, and I enjoy it because everyone's excited to talk about Star Wars.
It really kind of cheapens the like decade of podcasting I did before this, where you're just sending stuff out into the ether and no one cares. And for some reason, there's some magic here three of us talking over each other.
Is
it crosstalk?
It's me.
Crosstalk.
It's me. I'm the difference.
Crosstalk?
Crosstalk. Crosstalk Banish.
Crosstalk is my favorite Star Wars side character. I think he's in the
Crosstalk
cantina.
A droid? Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was my favorite.
He's like a Y-wing R2 unit or something.
That was my favorite bit of news about Skeleton Crew.
Oh, he's a protocol droid, of course. Sorry.
My favorite bit of news about the Skeleton Crew cast was there is a grumpy droid voiced by Nick Frost, which made my day.
A British droid. Nice. So.
Well, I like
I watched
Frost.
That entire Nick Frost was in like a low budget BBC sci-fi comedy that I watched all of that.
Which one?
Tony, Google stuff right now. This is my non-endorsement of Hyperdrive, a British television science fiction sitcom.
Hyperdrive? What's Hyperdrive?
In 2006 and 2007.
Oh, man.
Was
that?
It's just a...
Hyperdrive.
I realized
it's not before space. There's
no, that was 2001. Space. I suddenly realized I got it confused with like, wait, did this air on... Did this air on like UPN? And then I realized I think I'm thinking
of mistaken for Homeboys in Outer Space.
A show that I suddenly remembered existed.
Which show?
Homeboys in outer Space.
Oh, I don't know that one.
I don't think it's good.
I mean,
Miranda Hart's in this too.
Anyway.
Anyway, that's our further indictment of UPN's programming block from 1994.
Yeah. Oh, man. We'll be back. We'll be back to talk about Skeleton Crew when it airs, and we'll be back with some sort of special at some point in between now and then. But
tease.
I guess this is goodbye for now. So thank you everybody out there who listens. Thank you to all of our members who go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up and give a little bit of that membership money to A Complicated Profession, because we really appreciate it. This show doesn't have any ads. We do it for fun, but it's nice to get a little bit of some member support in there. So thank you, all of our members.
Yeah. And if you are in any way connected to the Sun Seeker app, we will happily take care of how to reach Danny to make sure he's in his head.
What? I do think that's where this was going.
I have nothing to say in this moment. Goodbye, nerds.
Yeah, I would like, of course, to thank my co-hosts now.
I already said
forever.
Goodbye. You can't thank me.
I can thank you. You don't say anything.
So begrudgingly, I would like to thank my co-hosts.
But I can't. They're dead.
Because I made poor choices in who I associated with and several years ago in the past.
You're hearing it first now. Tony has quit this podcast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Drama. So I was, you know, the Sunkeeper app was the final straw. So,
Kat Benish, thank you for being here to talk about the Acolyte.
You're so upset. You're welcome, Dan. Thank you all for listening. This has been fun.
Tony Sindelar, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, everybody.
Thank you once again, everybody out there who is listening. We will see you, I guess, in the fall/winter. But until then, may the force be with you.
Always.
Oh, you beat me.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.